for tapes of end time meetings, deliverance services, or Lake Hamilton Bible Campground's publication, Voices from His Excellent Glory, Declaring the Kingdom, writes Post Office Box 21516, Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas, zip 71903.
Our website is www.LakeHamiltonBibleCamp.com and LHBCOnline.com. There are many free audio files there. It's like going to Bible school at home.
Sunday evening, May the 30th, 1982. Memorial Weekend Seminar being held at Lake Hamilton Bible Campgrounds, Hot Springs, Arkansas. Speed Wilson, Colonel Speed Wilson, Marine Corps retired, is the speaker of the evening. His topic, the International Monetary Group.
Hey, Mr. Goldwater looked like a total idiot. In fact, Mr. Goldwater, a dear old man, heard him say one time in a private conversation, he said, after I watched the radio and the television and read the evening news, I almost voted for Johnson, too. Yeah. Even the people that killed him, assassinated him, Cronkite and Brinkley and that bunch, I think it was David Brinkley said afterward that if the truth were known, 97% of the people agreed with everything that Goldwater was saying. But the news media wasn't telling you what he was saying. They were telling you what they would interpret for you. By the way, he said the Social Security system, if it wasn't adjusted, would be broke within 10 years by 1974. And it was, but they adjusted it, and now it's broke. And they went around and saying that he would do away with the Social Security system. Remember? One candidate would do away. No, he said, let's make it solid. He's made some really outstanding remarks. I hated to learn the other day that he's not going to run for re-election. Well, International Monetary Fund, here's how they gain maintain control. Mr. Witteveen, a witch, Business Week calls him a powerful occult mystic, he was running all the investments of the International Monetary Group all over the world, and Pierre Schweitzer was the head of the he was the director of the International Monetary Fund a few years back. So Witteveen became director of the International Monetary Fund, and Pierre Schweitzer took over all of Witteveen's responsibilities as serving on the boards of all of Prince Bernhardt's corporations and all the others. Trusted agents change his jobs. Well, let's look at the World Bank. Robert McNamara, another trusted agent. He stepped down from being president of the World Bank early in the, Carter appointed A.W. Clausen to take his place. I found out who A.W. Clausen was. A.W. Clausen was the president of the Bank of America Corporation. And then I wondered where Mr. McNamara would go. It's no mystery. He's now the president of the Bank of America Corporation. Trusted agents changing jobs. National Security Council. That's the group that runs the White House. You might remember some of the names. Walt Whitman Rostow, McGeorge Bundy, some of those. They're always the powerhouse. They're in the White House to make sure that whoever the president, whoever the guy is who thinks he's the president, finds so that he doesn't do anything that would be contrary to the interest of the International Monetary Group. So in the National Security Council, we find Henry Kissinger. He was replaced by Zbigniew Brzezinski, the director of the Trilateral Commission, both of them professors from Columbia University. That's a dead giveaway if they're from Columbia University, because remember, that's where they parked Eisenhower, made him president of Columbia University, so they could get you used to thinking of something other than a smiling general, who was also a tool of the International Money Group and held all of his troops out so that the Russians could move in. A man by the name of George Patton didn't know that he wasn't supposed to win wars, and he would not stop, and they finally had to run over him with a 6x6 truck and killed him. That's how George Marshall died. George Patton. And also killed General Almond over in Korea the same way. They don't have much imagination. They do the same thing over and over again. Well, then the commander of NATO, when Mr. Haig became chief of staff of the White House, he replaced Rumsfeld, and Rumsfeld became the chief of staff of the White House. See, again, Rumsfeld was the ambassador to NATO, so Rumsfeld came to be chief of staff of the White House, and Haig went over to take over command of NATO. They traded jobs. And then to take over in the Army, recently when Mr. Haig retired from commander of NATO, General Rogers, who was a Rhodes Scholar, chief of staff of the Army, dead giveaway, isn't it? Rhodes Scholar. That would be Fulbright and old Secretary of State, forgotten his name now, a whole bunch of them Rhodes Scholars, because Mr. Rhodes made his fortunes in diamonds and gold, and that's where the nation Rhodesia was named. He figured he wanted his name to live forever, So they named a nation after him because they never changed names. Well, the joke's on him. It's now Zimbabwe. And the chief of staff of the army, Rogers, was replaced by General E.C. Meyer, who is a member of the Council of Foreign Relations and also came from the Brookings Institute. By the way, the Secretary of the Navy today, Lehman, is also a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. Now, and then, of course, the White House and the Nixons, we've covered Haig and his opportunities there. Well, let's talk about some of these personalities. I think you ought to know some of these folks. Robert McNamara's full name is Robert Strange McNamara. His background, he was well known in the Ford Motor Corporation as the individual who designed the Edsel. A great success. In fact, it was so successful, they realized he had a natural talent, so they sent him to be Secretary of Defense, because his job was to destroy the military power of the United States, in other words, to produce another Edsel. It took him 7 years, and he spanned three separate administrations. I ought to tell you that this is really nonpartisan. 7 years, three times as long as anyone else. By the way, the first Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, found out what was going on, and he was beginning to blow the whistle on this whole operation, and they had him committed to the Bethesda Naval Hospital for observation and pushed him out of the 16th floor. You can read about it in the Pentagon case. That's the reason Mr. Nixon wasn't about to go out to Bethesda. He knew it was a one-way trip. Well, Ford Motor Company, Secretary of Defense and President of the World Bank, and now he's the President of the Bank of America Corporation. One time he was appearing before the Senate Armed Forces Committee. Dear old brother F. Dirksen, a born-again Christian from Illinois, was on that committee. And they were questioning Mr. McNamara about his positiveness and some of the stupid things he had done, but he insisted they weren't stupid. And finally, Mr. McNamara got angry and he says, "You know, I can never remember in my whole life of ever really making a mistake." Well, somebody asked Senator Dirksen about it. And dear old Ev, in his best drawl, senatorial voice, he says, "Well, I notice he doesn't like to talk about the Edsel very much." And he says, "We're all well aware of who appointed him, but I am deeply concerned about who anointed him." He knew who anointed him, straight from the pit of hell. And when the Congress forced him to spend the money that they were appropriating for defense, the executive branch literally means they're to execute whatever the Senate and Congress pass it. Executive, executive. But they wouldn't do it. Started way back with Wilson of the General Motors Corporation, Secretary of Defense, wouldn't spend the money. So when they forced him to spend it, he made us buy airplanes that wouldn't fly, the F-111. Had to fire a lot of admirals and generals and colonels that finally let him buy it. And they lost most of them over in Vietnam, never got out of the perimeter of the airfield. And the M-16 rifle, which was a miserable weapon, still is a miserable weapon. All the military wanted to buy the Stoner rifle. Thank God the Israelis are now producing it. It's an outstanding rifle. And then in South Vietnam, we betrayed them when Senator Kennedy, McGovern, Church, and Bai, and Javits passed a bill stopping any further support of the Southeast Asia Treaty operations, and South Vietnam collapsed. Billy Graham says somewhere in the vicinity of over 6 million people have been killed since 1975, since we abandoned our friends in Southeast Asia. Do you see any of these people like James Fonda and Ramsey Clark and that group demonstrating about that? Nope. They have the same spirit as the communists have. It's called Antichrist, the bleeding hearts, the humanistic group. I was really interested one time. I had to go over to the, well, twice a year I had to go over to the Hill. I was Deputy Director of Marine Corps Reserve, responsible for the equipping, training, and mobilization of a quarter of a million, 250,000 to 300,000 Marine reservists located at over 300 training centers throughout the United States. So I'd have to go over twice a year to appear before the Senate and then over in the House Armed Forces Committee. But our budget is so small, it was very easy. I'd have it all written out and send it over and ask them if they, when I got there, I said, "You have the report before you. Mr. Chairman, do you have any questions?" And he usually say, "No, Colonel Wilson. And if you can't get by, just let Bill know." That's his administrative assistant, because our budget is so small, they drop it off when they round off the DOD budget anyway. Because there's only one Marine for every 20 other people in the armed forces. And besides the, well, I don't need to get into the internal politics of it. But it just turned out that some of the people that worked for both the Senate and the House Committee had generals' commissions in the Marine Corps Reserve, you know. We're not dumb. And I got over there, and McNamara just finished his dog and pony show. Dr. Enthoven's the dog, and Volts is the pony. And he had all his charts and everything there. And when I got there, well, he was just winding up, and he says, "Mr. Chairman," to Mendel Rivers, grand old man from South Carolina, says, Mr. Chairman, do you have any questions? He said, "No, Mr. Secretary, I do not. But I am fascinated with your maneuvering of figures." He says, "I am convinced that you could show with your figures that if a man had one foot in the fire and the other foot in a bucket of ice, that on the average he'd be comfortable." Everybody thought it was funny except Mr. Secretary. Well, McNamara's mission, as we've already discovered, and he attained that, and Russia became the single dominant military power in 1972. Let's talk about Heinz Alfred Kissinger. He's well known as Henry, but Heinz Alfred is his real name. He was a professor at Columbia University, member Eisenhower and that group. Then he became Nelson Rockefeller and David Rockefeller's confidant and employee. Then he met Mr. Nixon in 1967, and he became Mr. Nixon's director, National Security Council, just so the Rockefeller interest would be served. And he later became Mr. Nixon's Secretary of State and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. In that same year that he got the Nobel Peace Prize, so did the president of North Vietnam, got it for invading South Vietnam. I'll name you some other Nobel Peace Prize winners. Khrushchev, Fidel Castro, and I better stop there because, well, I won't. I'll just tell you. Martin Luther King. And I'm convinced the communists killed Martin Luther King because he had seen that he'd been used, and he said, "I've been to the mountaintop, and I'll be used no longer." 2 days later, he was dead. But they'll blame it on the rednecks, so-called. The communists do that all the time. They've done it repeatedly. When somebody finally wakes up to what's going on, is going to spill the beans on them, they kill them. Well, the director, and then he became the director of the Trilateral Commission when Zbigniew Brzezinski took his place in the White House. And then he became director of international matters for Chase Manhattan Bank. That's where he is today. And he's the only man in the whole world who belongs to all six of the International Money Group's top policy organizations. David Rockefeller only belongs to three, and he's chairman of two. In 1980, Mr. Kissinger was asked about the Trilateral Commission and the Council of Foreign Relations, and he asked him the point-blank question, "Does the Council of Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission run the world?" Mr. Kissinger said, "No, I can do that very well all by myself." Modest little fella. When they unveiled his portrait over in the State Department, he says that'll do very well until they put it on Mount Rushmore. Well, let's talk about Alexander Haig. You might remember that name, our Secretary of State. He had a doctor's degree, Ph.D., in international relations from Columbia University. Became Deputy Director, National Security Council, under Mr. Kissinger. When he became eligible to be a colonel, about 18 years of service, he was already a two-star general. He was a major general. When Kissinger became Secretary of State, Haig became Director, National Security Council, and began to run the White House. And was promoted directly from two-star to four-star. He never put on a third star. It's never happened in all history. Even the Washington Post was a little surprised at that. They're limited by the number of four-star generals they can have, so they forced a born-again, Holy Spirit-filled General Ralph Haines off of active duty and got his four stars and put them on General Haig. When Watergate occurred, General Haig became Civilian Haig. And he was destined to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but Watergate, they needed a chief of staff over in the White House to be Nixon's jailer, and he became Civilian Haig. He has 22 years of active duty, and is a four-star general. Marine Corps, you wouldn't even be considered until you had about 25, and you get your first star. They only pick 11 out of 150 in the Marine Corps to be brigadiers each year. Competition's a little heavy. And so then Civilian Haig, after Mr. Nixon resigned, then Civilian Haig again became General Haig. Isn't that neat? He again became General Haig, four stars, and was assigned the commander of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And today he is our Secretary of State. He is Kissinger's patsy. And, of course, Richard Allen, Reagan's first Director of National Security Council, was not a member of the team. And so I knew and I told people, watch him because he'll have to go. He's not on the team. And they ribbed up a totally unimportant thing over a $1,000 honorarium that he had even forgotten about, and all the others. and they ruined him and forced him out and put the Deputy Secretary of State Clark in. So now Kissinger is both Secretary of State and Director of National Security Council by proxy. And he visits the White House at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, just to see that everything's going all right. President Jimmy Carter was computer selected. I thought that was really interesting. I had to find out that through a French intelligence source. Averill Harriman and a big think tank up on Hudson Bay decided, why should we spend a lot of money to get these people all elected when we could just pick out somebody that everybody would like and he would do what we wanted him to do anyway? So they went to Washington and collected all the bylaws and objectives of all the powerful lobbies and put them all in a computer. And the evangelicals are pretty powerful in Washington. So then they printed out a profile of an individual that everybody would like. And sure enough, he had to be born again, although Gerald Ford has a beautiful testimony of how he became born again. I've heard him three times at full gospel meetings. But they blew it up that Jimmy Carter had been born again and all the others, and so that's how we got Jimmy Carter as our president. Some people wanted to know how Carter and Fritz Mondale, you know, how did Gritz and Fritz ever get together? Well, they're both members of the Trilateral Commission. Well, what was Watergate all about? It's about time we look at that. President Nixon, a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, turned against the International Monetary Group because he found out that he was actually an American before he was international man. 1971, as near as I can tell, the 15th of August, 1971, by an executive order, he stopped the sale of American gold to the central banking system, and they were buying it at $35 an ounce and selling it at $170 an ounce. That didn't make him too happy. Then on the 11th day of September, 1971, he made a speech. A prophet of God had said that there was going to be a very important event happening in the international money system on the 11th day of September, 1971, so I was watching. And Mr. Nixon did at noon. And here is his closing remarks. He said, quote, "As President of these United States, I'm hereby serving notice to the world that we will no longer compete in the international marketplace with one hand tied behind our back. Good day, my fellow Americans." That was a Friday. Monday morning, the dollar had been devalued overseas 30%. It's like every product in the whole United States selling overseas for 30% off, and it almost did the common market in. Oh, and the Prime Minister, remember his name, Prime Minister Tanaka of Japan, I found out later, had done the exact same thing 6 months earlier to the yen, and while he gave him the number one punch, Nixon came in and gave him the number two punch, and they all balanced out equal, Japan and the United States, and they actually locked Tanaka up on trumped-up charges, and they ruined Mr. Nixon through a totally unimportant event called Watergate. We'll come to Watergate in a minute. In 1973, he did another thing to him. Now, Watergate, he's a disgraced man by this time with the news media on him, just like they did Goldwater, and they're really giving him a bad time, distorting the tapes and all that sort of thing, and he's destroyed. But he came on the television in the evening. Remember, we got an oil crisis now, a total rip-off, engineered-type operation. There's no oil crisis. And at the end of that speech, he finished the speech that Heinz Kissinger and Alexander Haig and the others had written for him, and he deliberately put it down, pushed it aside, and he looked square into the camera, and this is what he said. "As President of these United States, I shall do everything in my power to make this nation independent of any foreign enemy." He says, no, I mean energy. No, he meant enemy. "Any foreign energy source, no later than 1980. So help me God. Good night, my fellow Americans." Well, the very next morning, our Secretary of State, or Rockefeller Secretary of State, Mr. Kissinger, called a conference, news conference, and he said, "I want you of the media to know that Mr. Nixon's closing remarks of last evening did not meet with my approval." So what? Well, you don't get the picture. He's running the operation. Well, could Mr. Nixon make good on his boast of making us independent of oil? I knew he could because we'd done a study over in the Pentagon in 1972 and found that we had enough known oil-producing reserves within the continental limits of the United States to carry out a 5-year conventional war and meet all essential civilian needs through the year 1982 if we never drilled another well. But we didn't go ask Rockefeller about it. We went over to the United States Geological Survey Bureau and asked Mr. Vincent McKelvey. Well, Mr. Vincent McKelvey made a fatal mistake, almost a fatal mistake, during the 1979 and the Carter administration in an offhand manner at the U.S. Press, National Press Club, after he had finished the talk, and they asked him, what are the energy reserves of the United States? What are the known energy reserves? He says, we have enough natural gas for 600 years, enough oil for about 130 years, enough oil shale for 1,500 years, enough coal for about 6,000 years, enough bleeder reactor atomic energy is unlimited, and enough uranium-238 in pellets and in rods, enough to generate the power we need for at least 100 years. 3 days later, Mr. McKelvey was drawing unemployment. Carter fired him. But Representative Sims, Republican of Idaho, had his talk recorded in the Congressional Record, and you can read it for yourself. There are many, many other things, and we've talked about atomic energy this morning just briefly. It's the safest, most ecological, most healthful way of generating electricity known to mankind. And everybody listen to Jane Fonda. She is not a scientist. She, as I understand, she even flunked out of drama school. Well, what happened at Watergate? Well, certainly, something happened over at Watergate. Well, there was a break in entry over there, and they were into Senator McGovern's quarters, and according to their testimony, they were taking pictures of his contribution records, trying to figure out where all this communist money was coming from that was supporting his campaign. They knew the American Dairy Association was paying for his quarters over there, which runs over $500,000 a year. But they had been in there three other times and photographed his records, but didn't get what they wanted or tried to. But there were a couple of double agents, James Magruder and H.L. Hunt, Harold Hunt, and the guy that wouldn't talk, Liddy. They wouldn't talk. But Magruder and Hunt, in testimony before Judge Sirica and the Senator Irwin Committee, both said that James McCord and Alfred Baldwin were double agents working for Senator Kennedy. And they were the ones that arranged for him to get caught. James McCord, after he arranged for him to get caught, turned state's evidence. In the criminal world, that's known as spilling your guts and go free. Alfred Baldwin, although he was named, was never called to testify. They were not interested in justice, they were interested in getting rid of Nixon. Charles Colson, our brother in Christ, in 1976 was quoted in the Dallas Morning News, not a controlled media. He said, the last 6 months in the White House, Mr. Nixon was literally a prisoner, and his jailer was his chief of staff, Alexander Haig. 15th of January, 1979, the U.S. News and World Report, when Mr. Haig announced that he was retiring from the Army to run for president. He was going to retire 1 July 79 and run for the presidency of the United States. The U.S. News and World Report, a house organ for the International Money Group, that's the reason you can read it and get the straight scoop, said, General Haig's role in Watergate crisis was to maneuver Mr. Nixon into resigning. The truth will finally out. Let's look at Watergate in perspective. By the way, there was nothing stolen, although there was a break in entry. There was about 100 break in entries every 24-hour period in Washington, D.C., but it was unusual because nothing was stolen and nothing was destroyed. And as the bumper sticker said, nobody drowned in Watergate, Chappaquiddick question mark. Well, let's look at Nixon versus John Kennedy election. Mr. Nixon won that election because if he had got the 26 electoral votes of Illinois, he would have been our president. Mayor Daley of Chicago, that's Harris County, was unable to deliver the Democratic votes. They voted for Mr. Nixon, and so they simply lost all the ballot boxes from Cook County. Somebody pointed out it was about 2 semi-truck loads worth. Probably took a wrong turn at Chappaquiddick Bridge. They really don't have much imagination. Compare that one with Watergate, where no ballot boxes were lost and no elections were rigged. Lyndon Baines Johnson, a congressman from the state of Texas, decided he wanted to be a senator from the state of Texas. So he ran against Coke Stevenson, a former governor, a very popular man who lived in Houston. That's Harris County. And according to you, I was down there as a jet instructor, so I know it firsthand, but I'll quote you a reference. U.S. News and World Report, 6 April 1964, pointed out that in 1948, Lyndon Baines Johnson, out of 2 million votes that were cast, he won the election by 87 votes. And the last 150 people that voted in Jim Wells County voted in alphabetical order, all same signed their name in green handwriting and a green ballpoint pen. And at least 15 of them had been dead for over 10 years. Resurrection came early in 1948 in Jim Wells County. And the election judge, who thought that was just a little unusual, even for Texas politics, demanded an investigation, and 3 days after his letter landed on a federal judge's desk, the election judge was found dead in his car with his head blown right off of his head, and it was common knowledge in all the counties surrounding Jim Wells that a fellow by the name of George Parr, the Duke of Duval, shot the judge. Compare that one with Watergate, and you never read about it. Let's look at Senator Teddy Bear, Kennedy, and Chappaquiddick. 5 married men, 1 single man, out with 6 single girls on a routine drunken crawl. Happened all the time, as the people out there said. And one of the girls left with the senator and was going back to the hotel probably, but she never made it. He drove a few distance down a paved road, came to a 90-degree turn. The road went here and into here. The paved roads turned 90 degrees to the left. He went 90 degrees to the right, drove over a half a mile on a gravel road, drove off a bridge, and the girl drowned. The bridge had been there 15 years. Nobody ran off of it. And the last time I checked, nobody had ran off of it yet. There's a telephone back a half a mile back. He could have called for help, but he didn't. He went back to the motel and fell across his bed. He said he was so tired after swimming the channel against the tide that he didn't wake up until 10 hours later, and he heard that this had already been found out. So he went forward and said that this incident had occurred. Now, he said he was asleep for 10 hours, but isn't it interesting that nowadays when you make a telephone call, it's automatically recorded as from what number it was called and what number it went to, and he made 9 phone calls during his sleep. 2 of them to the single man on the party and the rest of them to his lawyers. And by the way, when they recovered her body, they found that she probably lived for 4 or 5 hours after the car went into the water because it goes nose down and there's a big air bubble in the back. And we found pilots to live in airplanes up to 6 to 8 hours with the air that's in the cockpit. And so she could have been saved. We'll never know what it was because they absolutely refused to perform an autopsy in violation of federal and state law. There should have been an autopsy. He was heard before a jury, a grand jury, and then a jury. A judge heard him, really. And they found him guilty of the high crime of leaving the scene of an accident and was given a 2-year suspended sentence, meaning if you don't kill any more secretaries in 2 years, you're okay. Compare that with Watergate, where nobody drowned. Well, the 9th of August, 1974, Mr. Nixon, a broken man, doing the best he knew how for your and my best interest. But he came on television and said, and I wept with him, "I can no longer subject this nation to the torment that will be its fate if I remain its president. Therefore, I must resign as president of these United States. May God be with you. Goodbye, my fellow Americans." Well, I knew somebody had to know that Watergate was totally unimportant. And I kept watching. And sure enough, 1979 or 1977, a fellow by the name of Victor Lasky, a well-known author, published a book, and it got to 3rd place in the nonfiction category as a bestseller. The title of the book is "It Did Not Start with Watergate." And he put the facts out that made Nixon look like a glorified saint. And I knew that because I had known a few presidents. And the last lines in the book were this: Watergate was a news media event. It was created. While I was still in uniform, I had to go around over the country and at cocktail parties and other things, people would say, "You're from Washington. Do you think he's guilty?" And I'd say, "Who?" "You know, there are a lot of guilty ones in Washington. Who are you talking about?" They'd say, "Well, you know, Mr. Nixon." And I'd say, "Well, guilty of what?" And that was always funny to watch their face. They suddenly realized they didn't know what he was guilty of. But he must have at least murdered somebody. No, he wasn't guilty of a cotton-picking thing. In fact, on a national interview, they were interviewing director of the CIA, Mr. Helms, and he's the last honest director they had. And they asked him, don't they, when this was after Mr. Nixon was gone and he was being invited to France and China and other places, and the question was, don't they know that he's a disgraced man? Mr. Helms said, "Oh, no, everybody outside the United States knows that Watergate was a dirty political trick." You see, they didn't read the Washington Post, the New York Times, CBS, and NBC. They knew what the real story was. Some other people got ruined. Senator Edward Gurney, because he pointed out repeatedly in the Irwin Committee that it was a totally unimportant committee incident. And so they just simply charged him with misuse of campaign funds, ruined him. 4 years later, dropped the charges after he was $500,000 in debt and a ruined man. Senator Thomas Dodd, they ruined him because he crossed Fulbright, or Senator Halfbright, or whatever you prefer. But he's a Rhodes Scholar, head of the Foreign Relations Committee. And then Senator Keating of New York blew the whistles on the Cuban crisis. And that crossed the Fulbright group also. Look how they got rid of him. A guy whose home, his official home, was in Massachusetts, actually living in Vienna, Virginia, ran for the Senate in New York and was elected, and his name was Robert Kennedy. Can you figure that one out? Lincoln was one. Nixon wasn't the only one that ever turned against him. Lincoln came to town, and he found out through the Constitution he didn't have to buy his money from the Rockefellers and Rothschilds, really. The Rockefellers weren't around at that time, the Rothschilds. And so he started printing the greenbacks, just like the Congress is supposed to. Cheated them out of about $40 billion in interest. And the Secretary of War at that time was Stanton, and Stanton arranged for the President, the Vice President, and the Secretary of State to all get shot in one night. They shot Abraham Lincoln, they wounded the Secretary of State, but the one that was to kill Andrew Johnson, the Vice President, got drunk and he never made it there. So Stanton was a little upset when he got there and found him alive, and so Andrew Johnson, now President, fired Stanton, the Secretary of War. Under the law then, Stanton, the Secretary of War, would have been the President. He fired him, and he can do that. But then the House voted a two-thirds majority to impeach Johnson, and the Senate was only one vote short of impeaching him. They were one vote short. I thought that was going to happen to Mr. Nixon, but it didn't. Well, who are they in the world in the United States government today? Well, very interesting. Don't have time to go through them all, but in Mr. Reagan's cabinet, there are approximately 72 members of the Council of Foreign Relations or the Trilateral Commission. We'll hit them in the high places. Secretary of State Haig and 7 of his assistant secretaries and 9 of his ambassadors. Secretary of Defense Weinberger and 5 of his undersecretaries and assistant secretaries. And Secretary of Treasury Reagan and 16 members of the Presidential Economic Advisory Board, and the chairman of the board is George Shultz, Council of Foreign Relations. And Director of CIA William Casey and his Deputy Director Mr. Inman, and the Secretary of Commerce Baldridge, and the Secretary of Interior West, and Health and Education, or Health and Health Services, Swiker, and the Governors Jay Rockefeller and of New West Virginia, and Thompson of Illinois, and the Senate Majority Leader Howard Baker, and let's see, 19 other senators, and 9 congressmen, 7 executives of Time Life Incorporated, the New York Times, 22 of their executives, Newsweek and the Washington Post, they're one and the same, 16 of their executives, CBS Television, Radio 6, NBC 2, ABC 3, and of the big names and top reporters and commentators on radio and television, there are 22 of them for a few, David Brinkley, Dan Rather, Barbara Walters, etc. Labor unions, the president of the AFL-CIO, Lane Kirkland, and in the military, commander of NATO, General Rogers, and chief of staff of the Army, Mr. Meyer. Well, many people are speaking out against this whole operation. First, I would like to quote Goldwater. He wrote in a book, "The Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize control and consolidate the 4 centers of power, political, monetary, intellectual, that's education, and ecclesiastical, that's religion." Pat Robertson, CBN, said, "It is absolutely vital that we take control of the United States government away from the CFR and the Trilateral Commission." 13th of April, 1976, on the Public Broadcasting System Television, and Mr. Charles Morgan, I knew exactly who he was when I tuned in. He's the director of the American Civil Liberties Union Operations. And by the way, the ACLU drafted the Humanism Manifesto in 1933 for the Ford Foundation and the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation, and now became the Aspen Institute. And he said he was totally disillusioned with the ACLU, and he concluded this way, strong language, "I am convinced that the American government is a conspiracy against the best interest of the American people." David Rockefeller, the 9th of March, 1981, in a farewell speech to Mr. McNamara as he was leaving the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to go out and take over the Bank of America, I want to read you part of that speech. You didn't read this in any of your controlled news media. David Rockefeller is not happy. "The world which we work to construct is now threatened. The gravity of this moment, when Mr. McNamara and others are about to leave their post while a new administration reexamines American foreign policy, is great, and the threat is great. If we're going to serve the international institutions that we put in place, the moment is now or never. for the struggle between the old guard and the new is going to go far beyond the reduction of capital appropriations. That means money going to the money group. It is going to endanger the new world order, which we have based on an alliance between Wall Street and Washington. While we men of firms and banking organizations, international channels of economy and raw materials, the government is now building its own diplomatic and economic bridges between Washington and the rest of the world. Well, I thought that was supposed to do all the time. By our methods of government, our government contributes to the stability and economic growth of the world and our multinational benefits. When it is necessary, they contribute to their political support. They do that. Now, radical conservatives are attempting to destroy all that in seeking first and foremost to serve the national interest of the United States, end quote. Man, I'd love to hear him talk like that. Well, we'll have to close off. By the way, before I forget it, I have a list of the 72 members of Reagan's cabinet. They're back there and they're free. Pick up one. And, you got to remember that God has everything under control. It's very clear in the Bible principles that at the beginning of this age, God came first in the natural, the man Jesus Christ, to establish a spiritual kingdom. Do you get the picture? He came in the natural to establish a spiritual kingdom. My kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is in your midst. But now, at the end of this age and the beginning of the next age, God is coming spiritually into the many-membered body of Christ to establish a natural kingdom right here on earth. Proverbs 16, verse 9, it's repeated in Psalms. Man plans his way, but God directs his steps. God has everything under control. Beautiful. I'll close with an incident that occurred. A man that had quit the McNamara administration as an assistant secretary in the Defense Department said that when he got back, he was a Christian, says, when I get back to my home state, people are going to ask me what it's like to be in a position of power in the federal government. And he says, I'm going to tell them it's about like a log floating down the Potomac River, and on this log you find tens of thousands of ants, and each ant thinks he's driving. And he said, I knew that I was driving at least twice. Well, you don't have to worry about it. This whole system is going to collapse. The book of Revelation makes it very clear that Babylon, the Antichrist religion and the Antichrist central banking system will fall, and great will be that fall. So praise the Lord, one of these times, very shortly, I can see them meeting somewhere, and they can say, well, we have absolute control. Our man is now heading up the one world government. No one can buy or sell unless they have a number, and our computers control that. Now we have absolute control, men. We did it. And then you can see them jump up with their eyes bugging out, and somebody will shout, did you hear that trumpet? Hallelujah. Glory to God. Well, that's the end, and I ran a little over. Any questions, and we'll try to... Oh, the question, so it'd be on the tape, investment of money. Temporarily, again, I want to remind you, the Bible warns you specifically about in the last days, you do not buy gold and silver. Because it says, in the last days, they'll throw their gold and silver in the streets, because it will not fill their bellies nor quench their thirst. The book of Revelation says if you want some gold, you can trade about a quart of wheat for about a week's wages. So right off the top of your head, the best thing to invest in right now would be long-term storage food. Because you can't lose. Food is going to go up. It increased 30% last year. That's better than you can do in most money funds or anything else. And it'll probably double this year. Now, you can buy food that can be stored up to 15 years. Long-term storage food. Probably more nutritious than the garbage you get in the cans around here. If you're interested, we might give you some of the titles. I saw one of the names on a bottle of vitamins in the room upstairs, Neolife, and Arrowhead Farms in Texas, and all those are Christian organizations. We'll get to you in a minute. And besides, if you like gold, very shortly you can sell some of the food and have all the gold you want. But if it doesn't turn out like we're talking about, don't worry about it. You can't eat the gold, but you can sure eat that long-term storage food. So it's a no-lose situation. You just can't lose. Also, if we end up with a currency switch, you might want to start saving coins because it'll take a long time before they can convert these machines around here to quit taking the coins we have, and they may not. So coins may be one. You can't lose. You can be able to spend them anyway. So you might be a good shot to start saving some coins. And if it doesn't work out, well, I can still turn them in. They're still currency. You can't lose on that one either. Now, for investments, if you want a temporary investment, is to invest in treasury bills or treasury notes. And you can invest for as short a period of time as 91 days. Stay out of the money fund market. It's a rip-out. It's like the gold operation. If you have any property in large cities, 200,000 people or more, sell it but quick and get out. The cities are an abomination to the Lord, and they're going to explode very shortly, not with thermonuclear activity, but riots, because the AFL-CIO controls the Teamsters, and when they quit shipping food in, you can see what's going to happen in the cities. If they shot each other for 5 gallons of gas, you can imagine what they're going to do when they run out of food. They have no more than about 2 or 3 days of food stored in any city and any warehouses all over the area. The next best investment is to buy productive land and pure water. Jim McKeever recommends that you buy that land at least 350 miles from any big city. That's about a gas tank's gas away of any car, so that they can't get to you. But I don't go for this thing of shooting people when they come after food. I go for giving them a sandwich and then share the bread of life with them. And if you're interested in the market, then it's communications and transportation, and that's it, communications, transportation. Because this gospel is going to be preached, and if you can find anything that a new technology involving fiber optics, man, get on board. If you want to know a couple of companies exactly, that would be National Cash Register, TWR, Digital Corporation. I'd steer clear of IBM right now. But those I just named are manufacturing the equipment that makes the buying and selling with a number work. And we're going to be buying and selling with a number. So it's a good investment. And I could give you some more specifics if you're interested in them. Is that what you were had in mind? Brother back there, Morris, and then Lisa. Well, if 72 people can't rip you off, I don't know how many it'll take. The question was, is President Reagan ripping us off? Well, maybe Governor Reagan or President Reagan may not be, but his 72 Rockefellerites certainly are. Mr. Horowitz, was it Horowitz? No, that's not right. Anyway, he's a well-known writer, appeared on the 700 Club a while back. Novak, Mr. Novak, well-known writer. He's published a book, The Reagan Revolution. And he said he didn't know whether to call it the Reagan Revolution or the Bush Rebellion. And he points out that Reagan is the only honest man in the whole cabinet outside of Mr. Reagan, James Watt, and just those two. Of course, he has some like Herb Ellingwood that are special advisors and some of the others. So you can see why the Antichrist system is after James Watt. He's born-again tongue speaker. Well qualified to be Secretary of Interior because he was once Deputy Secretary of Interior. I think I made a mistake a while ago. The fellow Bowdridge is the Secretary of Commerce, not Interior. Yes, not much Mr. Reagan can do about it. You know, even John Kennedy complained about that the president really doesn't have much power. Mr. Kissinger said that when he became the most popular man in the United States, according to Roper poll, for 3 consecutive years. And right after he became Secretary of State, they said, aren't you sorry that you can't be President of the United States? See, he's foreign-born, so he can't be. He blithely said, oh, no, says the power of that office is much too limited. He was more powerful as Secretary of State than he would have been if he was President. Yes, sir. I don't know of anyone. I could go down through the congressmen and senators and see. But there you are. You got a Rhodes Scholar running for governor. He may not be a member of the organization, but he's been to their on-the-job training school. Who? Yeah, you can pick them out when the news media... See, when the news media, the ones that I name, start supporting somebody, I'm against them already. Because I know who they're for. All that. The lady here, and then we'll come to you. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Episcopal Church is a member of the National Council of Church. So is the United Methodist. most of the Presbyterians, except for the one that just broke out and the Salvation Army that just broke out. You can run down through the list, sure. In the beginning of the National Council of Churches, there were 29 members that were also corresponding members in one of the communist organizations or subversive organizations listed on the Attorney General's list. In fact, former Senator McGovern right now is going all over the country lecturing to the Lawyers Guild. It's listed as a subversive organization on the Attorney General's list. You couldn't get in the military if you belonged to it, and yet he served as a senator. Do you know who the communist representative is now that McGovern, Church, By, and Javits are gone? Ted Kennedy. When Castro has something to say, Ted Kennedy pops up and the puppet starts talking. McGovern used to be, but now it's Ted Kennedy. That if you have something you don't need to live on and you can convert it to something that you may need to live, you better start converting. This may happen. See, we've had a major depression every 50 years. I mentioned that the other day. And the last one began in 1920. You had 50 years. This one began in 1970. Then it's just like in 1920, it got pretty good down, and then it started a big peak back up in the market, and then 1929, the bottom fell out. We're right at the point the bottom ought to fall out most any day. In fact, it's already fallen out. There are more savings and loans that failed in the last year than in the deepest time of depression. More farm loans are in arrears and delinquent than any time during the depression. And, you can go on. The government is taking 70% of all available funds just to pay for the interest on the national debt, leaving only less than 30% for business to cooperate on. And you see, it's just going to go on and on. The thing has to collapse. And it will collapse. And great will be the fall. It'll continue. There really won't be much change except when the depression is over, the banks intend to have control of everything. And I want to warn you, if you have a house or some major property that you're depending on almost paid off, you better pay it off. Or if you can't, go borrow some cotton picking much on it that the banks won't be able to take it back because you'll owe them more than it's worth. That's the best way to be, because if you don't owe very much, they're going to take your property first because they can sell it for a big profit. But when the collapse comes and you owe them more than it's worth, they're not going to bother you. They just want somebody to stay there and take care of it. So the best way to be is to not owe anybody or owe so cotton picking much that they won't touch you. Well, they're doing that. That's what the interest rate does. 22%. Can you imagine any business in the United States can make a profit when most of the profit margin was down around 10% return and now they have to pay, what, 17%, I guess, or 16% the other day? There's no way you can do it. That's the reason. I have an excellent tape by J.C. Lewis, the head of the Central Western Independent Farmers, and he pointed out, and it's an excellent 90-minute talk on how they got control of our government, how they got control of our money, and how they got control of our energy, and now they're moving to control the food, and that's the reason the little farmers are being forced out, and the banks are controlling the whole thing and a whole bit. And once they got the food, then the so-called food shortage, all that will be over with because they'll mark it all up and they'll have absolute control. That's their plan. I don't know that it's going to work out. It's going to be interesting to see. There was, yes. You never did, the lady back here. Who? Oh, hey, no ma'am. No ma'am. Boy, you'll have to get up early in the morning to get ahead of Haig. Alexander Haig was exactly right when he went to the White House and took over when Reagan had been shot, because the vice president was not in town. He was down in Texas, and not the sequence to accession to office, but the sequence of accession to control of the government in the interim is the Secretary of State. And besides, he's the only one in town that knew where the bathroom was. The rest of them didn't know anything. They just got into town. They didn't know where anything was. Well, man, Haig run the White House for Nixon because they had Nixon all locked up and incapacitated. So even if he was out of order, he would have been the logical one to go over and show him what to do. And besides, he's talking to Bush. They're on the same team. They're both members of the Trilateral Commission, the Council of Foreign Relations. They're old buddies. They meet regular over at David's house. There was a lady here. Yes, and then don't let me forget you now. We'll come across. You'd have to, if they're municipal bonds. The question was about long-term tax-free bonds. If they're municipal bonds, utilities, real trouble. Real trouble. Cities, many of them are bankrupt now, and they're going to get worse. And thanks to Ralph Nader and Jane Fonda and all the others, they're wiping the utilities out, too. We're going to have massive electrical blackouts probably this year, certainly 1984, because there's no way. If you live out in California, the last 2 years, they've rotated blackouts out there. They don't have enough electricity to carry the whole thing, so they black out Marin County one night and another county the next night, and they pass it around. And we're not going to have enough electricity. Well, you know, why do they say thermonuclear is not safe? Because the Rockefellers own all the oil, and they own all the coal. They don't care how many people die. They just want to sell all that old stuff before they bring out the uranium, and they own most of the uranium. That's the reason that thermonuclear power is not safe. It's safe everywhere in the world except the United States. Oh, the question. Will Mr. Nixon ever be vindicated? And I'm glad you mentioned the word vindicated. I received a tape from Billy. No, it was in his Voice of the Overcomer, and that Ed Ken Copeland's letter. The Voice of the Believer. The Voice of the Believer, yeah. But anyway, Ken Copeland's newsletter, and this was right after Mr. Nixon had been forced out of office, and Brother Copeland received a prophecy, and he doesn't know anything about what we're talking about. Although Ken and I had talked about it briefly one time in St. Louis in 1972, I guess it was, that I could see some things happening. But the prophecy was, as God spoke, Mr. Nixon was my servant, and he will be vindicated before he departs this earth. And a prophet by the name of Bill Vanderbilt, a veterinarian, a very reliable prophet, got almost the same response within about 2 or 3 days of the convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, that Mr. Nixon would be vindicated in his lifetime. It was found in Atlanta just last year in a poll that if Mr. Nixon ran against Carter, Mr. Nixon would have been elected by 76% of the votes in Atlanta. And Carter came from Atlanta. Do any of you know Judge Kermit Bradford? He was a judge in Fulton County, that's Atlanta, for 17 years, and he served under Jimmy Carter. And when I found out who Carter was, and before he ran for office, found he was a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, and so I asked Kermit, he's an international director of Full Gospel, so I asked him, I said, what about this fellow Carter? I knew quite a lot. And he said, Speed, you can be sure of one thing. The biggest lie I ever told you is I'll never lie to you. He said, the guy is a compulsive liar. And that's what the attorney, the assistant governor of Georgia said, Maddox, what's his name, I've forgotten. But you know, Axe Handle Maddox, that was the governor before. He said that Carter was a compulsive liar. And he is. So that was another characteristic that the computer said they ought to have. So Jimmy Carter fit that one, too. He fit all the characteristics. So, yes, Mr. Nixon was never disgraced in the eyes of the world. It was only in the United States that he was disgraced. Any others? And then we really... Yeah, oh, sister, I forgot you. Thank you. The question is, do I think there'll be any improvement for the people in the United States? And you're talking about economic. No, I don't. I think it's going to get worse. And I really think it's going to get a lot worse. It's going to get worse fast, as it did around 1929. And it won't begin to get better till somewhere around the year 2001, somewhere out in that range. And what comes out of that's going to be most interesting. I expect a regime by Christians to come out of it. Well, I'm not going to call what it is. I'm just telling you what's going to happen. You can put anything you want on it, whether it's the judgments of the nation, the wrath of God, or... it's not going to be a hot time in the old town. The happy days are not here again. Oh, they're just power hungry. As you know, you've heard the saying, and it's so true. And, of course, we quoted the scripture that the love of money is the root of all evil. And it sure is. The power hungry. What do you think drove Napoleon? What do you think drove Alexander the Great and Kublai Khan, Hitler and all that bunch? It's just the hunger for controlling somebody else. And the power behind it is Satan himself, Antichrist spirit. You see, no man after the flesh. It's the spirit behind the whole thing that is the continuity. It's Satan that's running the whole, the lady in the way in the back. Did somebody up here hear and can tell me? Oh, I mentioned that earlier in the talk that the Falkland Islands is a neat maneuver for the Russians to get the South American countries to all turn against the United States, because we have to line up with England. Any law-abiding country would have to. And, of course, it was to get about three-quarters of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's Navy off way down in the South Atlantic, so that if Russia chooses to move into the Middle East, which she's ready to do, there won't be much over there to keep her from doing it. And the only one that's going to win is going to be Russia and the Falkland Island operation. We certainly won't come out winner. We're going to get the dirty end of the stick either way it goes. And that's deliberate, too. Yes, brother.
Oh, don't get swimming.
The reason Russia will invade the Middle East is to cut off the oil to the NATO nations and the common market, because over 90% of all their oil comes from the Middle East. And once you cut it off, then Russia would take Western Europe and all of that area just waiting around till they use their oil up. Just that simple. And it's very simple to do, because they got them surrounded. If you're really interested in the details of how this will work out, get the tape back there, the Russia, the United States, well, it really ought to be Russia, North America, the United States and Canada, and Israel in prophecy. And we go through in detail, verse by verse, Ezekiel 37 through 39, and also Isaiah 19 and Amos 9, 10, all those scriptures, and Joel, and all the others. See, there's a battle of Jehoshaphat, or Jezreel, is coming up. There's no such thing as a blood and guts battle called Armageddon. It's a spiritual battle, and you're in it now. It's kingdom against kingdom that Jesus prophesied. Sure do. Yeah. It sure fits, doesn't it? You'll find a lot of these things will fit in the Bible. And as I said, most everything I talk about is related to confirming the fact that we're in the time of the end of this age. Because when you can identify an outfit this clear, then it must be just another sign. And that's all it is to me, is just another sign. But also knowing who they are, then I can begin to plan on what to do. And I'm sorry I didn't have time on the tape to answer the question. People would throw up the arms and said, now that I know this, what do I do? The Bible says you've got to be led of the Spirit. Those who are led of the Spirit are the sons of God. Those that are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. There's no way I can tell you what you ought to do, because it's a many-membered body, and each member has a different body function within the body of Christ. Billy Graham says if you find two Christians doing the exact same thing, one of them missed God. And that's true. So, somebody said, yeah, but you got two hands. Well, you try to put the right one over on the left and see how well it works. You got two kidneys. Well, maybe so. But you don't know. But anyway, there might be some duplication here and there. But generally speaking, the analogy that Paul gave of the body. It's so sad to me as I go around, people say, did you hear about brother so-and-so? Bless God, he's a man of God, and he's doing so-and-so. And I'm not led to do that. I must have missed God. Oh, forget it. Or then they'll come up and say, you heard about brother so-and-so? He's doing that. And bless God, he sure missed God, didn't he? My answer is, that's between him and God. I can't judge it. I don't know what the Lord's telling him to do. Well, thank you very much. It's certainly been a blessing being with you and sharing with you, and I appreciate your tolerance and your patience. Those that are led by the Spirit of God, they are.
This is the end of this message. Our website is www.LakeHamiltonBibleCamp.com and LHBCOnline.com. There are many free audio files there. It's like going to Bible school at home.